You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. I don't know, I just thought of something funny. I get confused on which guest is going to be this week, and we started doing an intro and realized Ryan looks at me and says,
wrong guest.
Wrong guest. It's funny how different guests act in terms of people are busy. It's just funny how some people are really incredibly professional and on time and this. I think most people strive to do that. To be that. I know I do. But sometimes things happen. Well, things get a little crazy sometimes. And this guest was, it was a lot of fun. It was one of those things where he actually messaged me a few weeks ago and was like, love to come on the show again if you need a guest. He's just really cool. I don't want to F-bomb, but, and it was funny because I was like, yeah, man, of course. I'd love to have you. You got a new show. You're doing things. You're a funny guy. You're a big comedian. And so I was like, great. How about this date, 10:30? And then a week before, he's like, hey, are we doing this, Mike? I'm like, yeah, 10:30 next week. 10:30. Great. And then we get to the day, and I'm sitting here with Ryan, and I'm like, I don't know if it's going to happen. I mean, again, when you're busy, if I don't write something down, Ryan, in my calendar, if I don't write it on the whiteboard, if I text myself, forget it. Because, the texts keep going down as people text you, and it's gone. If you email it, I have a better chance of remembering and then writing it down and putting it in the calendar. I'm a one-man squad sort of here at the house, so I lose shit. So I understand. So all of a sudden, 15 minutes pass, and I call him. I actually didn't have his number, but one of my friends gave me it. But I had his email. I mean, we're buds. And he's like, he calls me. He's like, hey, mate. I'm like, yeah. How you doing? He's like, is this now? I'm like, yeah, we're going to do the end. Yeah, right, man. I just woke up and just jump in the shower, clean off, and give you a call. It was great. He wasn't ultimately really that late. He wasn't, he was just, he's just so funny. He's naturally, I always say there's certain people that you look at and you're like, he's just funny. I think I say that to him in the beginning of the interview.
You do, yeah.
I found myself laughing a lot. I don't laugh a ton, right?
He had some good stories.
He has some good stories, Jim Jefferies.
And you're right. It's the accent and it's just his general appearance.
And everybody, yeah. And everybody always wants to do the Australian accent, the English accent. We're Americans. We can't always do it. He's like, hey. But I went to Australia a few times and we talk about that. But just want to say thank you to everybody out there who's listening. I do it every week. But the patrons, you're unbelievable. Thank you for joining Patreon. Thanks for giving extra support to the podcast. And again, if you don't know what Patreon is, join it. Go to the Inside of You podcast on Patreon, and there's tiers, and you get questions with me, and you get to ask guest questions, and you get YouTube lives and discounts on merch on the online store and conversations with me. And it's a lot of fun, man. It's a big community. It's people are just really loving it. It's a family. You can see in my room on the couch where Ryan's sitting, we got Inside of You pillows that Kristen made for me and Leah, and look at this pillow over here inside of you. Look at with all the names of guests. It's pretty incredible. I got, this is, look at this. This is Emily made me this. And,
ooh.
I have these things. I keep them, I think they're really nice. When people make me things, it just makes me happy. And, I'm a fan. I have posters anyway, we know all these things. This Saturday coming, the 29th of August, Rob Danson and I will be playing another stage at our monthly stage that we just do one. And we got some new covers that are awesome. We got some originals that you haven't heard. Play some Left and Laurel songs. There's some Zoom calls for winners, top bidder prizes, all that shite. It's going to be a lot of fun. And anyway, it's so funny because right now I'm texting with name drop, Dulé Hill and James Rodé. And James Rodet Rodriguez, sorry, changed his name back to his surname, original surname, which is amazing. And but they're coming on the podcast. So thanks for all the support. I love you guys. It means a ton to me. We're going to just keep on rocking. Great news coming up, coming soon. I can't wait to express that with you. But please follow us on all the social media, on Instagram at Inside You Podcast, at Inside You Pod on Twitter, and write a review, all that stuff. Email your friends, tell everybody. Just want to keep growing this thing and just want to keep being real and open to guests. I feel like, you know, somebody said, you're like a listener. You ask questions that people would want to ask. He's like, you kind of dumb it down. I'm like, what does that mean?
That's like, backhanded.
No. Yeah. He's like, no. You say things like a kid wants to know, like you're just curious. And I go, okay, I like that. That's kind of how I feel. I just kind of want to, you know, anyway. All right. So thank you. Right now, this guest, he sells out all over the world, stadiums all over the world, big comedian. You've seen him on everything. He's working on a new TV show that's going to be coming out. He's got a new podcast to talk about. He's awesome. He's hilarious. Let's get inside of Jim Jeffries.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
You know, I know why you're successful. I know why you have all these shows and all these, you stand up around the world. Because you just look at you and you just, there's something, I don't know, like your next special should be called Innocent Looking But Fucked Up. You just look like you're such a, like, you have this gentle face, like this sweet look on your face, but you're up to fucking no good, Jim. I know it.
I'm like a Cabbage Patch doll.
You mean a garbage pail kid?
Yeah, I'm a garbage pail kid. Whatever happened to them? I know. Let's reminisce about that and all the stuff that went on. How are you, my friend, anyway? You enjoying quarantine?
I'm making the most of it, man. I've been in and out of sort of anxiousness, you know, a lot of anxiety, little depression, but mostly, you know, good. The busier I am, man, the busier I am. Is that how you're doing? You're busy.
Yeah, you go up and down. I either like doing a lot of work or no work. So this sort of middle ground isn't good for me. Because, you know, there's still people saying, oh, turn in this or write this script or do something like that. And so you still have that feeling of anxiety where you've got homework looming over you. You know, it doesn't feel like a holiday.
So did you do homework and when you were young? Were you always the guy who, like, I was, honestly, I'm not just trying to say, I was the guy who tried to get out of it. I was the guy who tried to cheat. I was the guy who was like, you know, the smart kid, be friends with that guy. I would always try to get by because I never thought I was very smart or that I could do it on my own.
Yeah, I've never studied or anything like that. I've never been that bloke who put the time in, you know. I wish I could tell you that I was a more conscientious person, but I was bloody hopeless, I was. And I'm going to try this charger. Got it. All right, I reckon I'm good now. Can you still see me?
Is that your screening room?
Yeah.
Dude, that's, you know, I thought I had a cool screening room and it's just a couch and a big screen, but that's a real deal. That's like somebody came in there from AMC and did your shit. First of all, you know, it's funny because you communicate through Instagram. That's sort of how, in a lot of ways. I mean, you're like, hey, mate, this is easier for me. Just like, you know, I'll do the podcast, mate. So is that a bad Australian accent?
It's not bad.
So you're like, well, yeah, what time? I'm like, 10:30. Great. You want the day? Yeah, sure. It's just like, and then, so right before you come on, my editor here, Ryan, my engineer, he's like, he knows to come on, right? He's going to, you know, I go, I don't know. I don't know where Jim Jeffries is. Like, look, I don't know you that well. I've never really hung out with you. I'd love to hang out with you. It worries me that, like, it's unpredictable. I usually, you know, those days of hanging out with people who go get, you know, shit faced and all that. I don't know exactly if you do that, but there's that maybe preconceived thought. Am I going to get in trouble if I'm with Jim, or is Jim going to just like, no, mate, we're just going to go for a burger?
I think there's a myth about me that you're going to get wasted and there's going to be drugs involved and all that type of stuff. And that myth was perpetuated by me. I put that all out there. So when I get like when I start working on for a new network or something like that, and they really talk to me like, you know, you're going to behave, right? And I'm actually a pretty well behaved bloke who's done some things. Most of my partying was done in my 20s. You know, I mean, we were 40s now. And so I, you know, I've only got myself to blame. But yes, that could happen. We could get shit faced, but probably we'll be fine. Probably.
So I wouldn't be in any danger, most likely.
Oh, no. I never get arrested or anything like that. You're all fine. It's very, very safe. And good. My main vice these days is I like an edible every now and again. And I enjoy magic mushrooms. And I do them about once every 2 weeks. And that's not really a shit-faced scenario, is it?
I've met a lot of, in fact, women who, you know, you get on a dating app or whatever, and, you know, you kind of, you don't want to interrogate, but you want to find out, you know, is this a party person? Is this a whatever? And then they're like, you know, it always comes down to, well, I like the edibles. I'll have a mushroom every once in a while, like, you know, every other day. But, I mean, I had a bad experience on mushrooms and I never did it again, but I'm wondering if I should, because a lot of people say it could be fantastic.
It's wonderful. I don't do hard drugs. I haven't done hard drugs in a very, very long time. And I'm glad about that because they used to make me so depressed the next day. And alcohol makes me so depressed the next day. And mushrooms, I have no depression on afterwards, none. And so that for me is, I'm really thinking about tomorrow more than the experience in the moment, I guess. But like, it's one of these things with mushrooms. You can have take them for 8 hours, and you'll have 7 hours that are wonderful, and then there's about 15 minutes in there that where you just go, "Oh, I never did anything with my life. I could have been a better son. Oh God, I should apologize to this person I fucked over when I was 18." You know what I mean? Like those things come and haunt you.
But you never do that. You never, in the middle of mushrooms, go, "I'm going to call, you know, Sally." And
well, I always speak to a friend of mine, and they'll always go, "You're fine. You're worrying about nothing. Everything's good. You're not a terrible person." You go, "I'm not." And then, you know, the next day they go, "You are a terrible person. But we felt like in that moment we had to protect
them." That's exactly right. Well, see, here's the thing. You know, when your friends are like, "Oh man, try this joint. Here, just take a hit. It's really good." I go, no. Because then you take a hit off that joint and you're looking in the mirror going, you're fine. So I don't trust those guys anymore. So I have to get the right amount. So if someone goes, "Hey, just try mushrooms." Now mushrooms might be right. That amount might be perfect for Jim Jeffries, but I take it. It might put me over the edge. I'm a lightweight. So how do I know?
Take little amounts until you hit your ceiling. You know what I mean? That's why the whole weed thing, like remember the Wild West of marijuana when people made edibles and you'd have a brownie and you'd have no idea how much was in it. And you're just like, "All right, off we go." And now you get these little blueberries and they say 5 milligrams and you're like, "Okay." And then it'll take 10. Or you take 20. I always take 20 is my sort of entry level. I take 20 milligrams and then sit back. And then I just eat like an asshole, you know?
Then that's it.
Have you gained any weight in quarantine?
No, I think I probably, you know, I mean, I'm not bragging about it, but you know, the only thing I've done is like, I'm trying to work out every other day, but I got stressed because my dog is a little sick and he's old and it's like all these things start coming at you and you're alone. I'm alone a lot, but I started smoking a little bit, cigarettes, not good.
Not good.
And I'm not doing it a lot, but it's not good. You smoke?
No.
Say,
don't touch it.
No. Yeah. I don't do anything else really, but I'm like, going, I'm sitting there. I'm not even enjoying the cigarette. I'm like, why are you doing this?
Yeah. Oh no, that's the worst of all the habits. That one. Oh my God. I wish I never touched one of those things.
You smoked for a long time?
I have done, but I don't any longer. Don't touch them.
I had a doctor tell me once, he's like, "You smoke?" I go, "Oh, well, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe a pack, two packs tops a week." He's like, "Oh, that's nothing. That's not going to bother you." I'm like, "Really?" I'm like, why did he tell me that? Why did he say that was okay?
Well, you know those ones where you answer the doctor. This is the problem with the American healthcare service. They go, "How many cigarettes do you have a week? How many drinks do you have?" And then you're like, you go, "Well, I should answer this honestly because this could save my life. But I don't want to answer honestly because it might make my premiums go up. And, you know, when I get my final acting job, I'll never be able to get healthcare because I was honest." So I'll just risk cancer and tell a lie right now.
Do you have any back problems? No. Michael, you have 7 back surgeries. You put no here. I'm like, yeah, but I don't have back problems now.
When I first came to America, I had to get private health care because I didn't have health care here. I just had to pay for it. And I was like not a citizen and all that type of stuff. And so I thought, I'll be honest, because I'm a pretty healthy person. I've got no, main big problems. And I said, I've had a few hemorrhoids in my life and one hemorrhoid surgery, which isn't pleasant. And I said and I've been on and off antidepressants for about 10 years, but I haven't taken them for the last 4 years, but I suffered from depression. And then they came back and they were like, you have to pay like $600 a month for healthcare. And I was like, you fucking what? Because I've never been in a country that didn't have public healthcare, And so I was like, why? And they said, oh, because you suffer from depression. And I go, but the end result is I kill myself and you don't have to pay for that. It's not like I've got an ailment that's going to keep getting worse and I'll have to be put into traction and all this type of stuff. It's like, there's only 2 ways this can go.
It'll
either get better or it won't.
I didn't know that when you fill those little questionnaires out, that's for insurance.
I'll tell you what, when I had the hemorrhoid surgery, right, they put me on a triangle, like foam pillow, this big triangle thing. So your ass is right in the air. And then they shave your asshole. And they give you the gas that you're about to be knocked out, the anesthesia, right? And just, it's one of those times that you don't want to be recognized, right? And just as I'm going down, just as I'm about to go into that sleep, one of the nurses sticks, and my head's in like a massage chair hole, like I'm facing forward. And this nurse, she ducks her head underneath and she looks at me and she goes, my boyfriend's your biggest, and then I fall asleep. And I'm like, what are the chances that that lady isn't going to go back to her boyfriend and go, oh, we looked up Jim Jefferies' asshole. It was filled with polyps and fucking warts.
That's exactly what I would think. I would think that's what, oh my God, they're going to go tell him what a dirty asshole I have. Somehow my asshole lips are bigger than anyone else's.
Yeah, like Jim Jefferies has a huge prolapsed asshole that we had to do surgery on. And you're like, all right.
And then you can't sue her because then the attention's really everywhere.
Well, I find that's why I mention things like this on podcasts. It's nice to have those things just out in the open. So, they're out of the way.
Yeah. Do you go to the doctor a lot? Are you a guy that goes, are you sort of a hypochondriac? Are you worried you see a mole? I see a mole like on my leg. I'm like, oh, that's weird. That wasn't there before.
No, I don't think I overly go. I go a few times a year to the doctor. I try to get a physical and all that type of stuff. But my mother used to go to the doctor every week. Every week she had a standing appointment with the doctor. She'd go every Thursday, even if she had nothing wrong with her. She was just like, she was like a rusty old car that they kept on tinkering with and just kept it on the road. And she would go in and, so I think because of that, I've purposely made myself not a hypochondriac, where I go, you don't want to live your life like that, constantly worrying. So maybe I don't worry enough about my health.
My mother did that too, but my mother, even to this day, it's like she's going, like someone just died. She's like, I'm getting my mammogram, Michael. I'm just so scared. Just, will you pray for me? I'm just really, I'm like, Mom, and I got, for years, I would kind of, console her and go, hey, it's going to be great. Your boobs, your breast, your, they're going to be, everything's going to be fine, And then now I'm like, Mom, fuck off. We do this every time. It's the one time I yell at her, it's fucking something horrible is going to happen. But she's always hypochondriac. So I think I developed some of that. And now I'm backtracking. I'm sort of like, hey, I went to the dentist once this year. That's enough. I'm brushing my teeth. I'm going to the doctor. I'm going to get a prostate exam. I got my first prostate exam at 48. Probably should have got a little earlier. I didn't like it. Once a year, man, or whatever. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to go to the doctor all the time.
My mother used to go every Christmas. My mother has passed away, but like before she passed away, every Christmas she went, this will be our last Christmas together. We had about 10 years of this. I don't think I'll be around for the next Christmas. Okay. And then like maybe 15 years ago, I got a phone call at the Edinburgh Festival And I get a phone call from my dad saying, your mum's not well. And then mum was there saying that she may not make it through the night. I had the family doctor say, oh, no, she might not make it through the night, you know. And I was like, oh, no. And so I cancelled all my shows and I got in a plane and I flew for 24 hours and not knowing, because you couldn't turn your phone on, not knowing what was going to happen. I flew from 24 hours from London to Sydney, stopping off in Hong Kong. And then I got there and I rushed from the airport into a cab and I get to the hospital. She's sitting upright on the iPad. There's nothing wrong with her. The bloody the doctor goes to me, he goes, oh, her spirits really picked up when she heard you were coming. So when she was dying, and I was here in America when that happened, they ring me up going, oh, she's got about 48 hours. And I went, are you sure? It's a long flight. Because I've done this before.
Did you give her grief when you saw her when she was alive? Where you're like,
I definitely said, next time you better be bloody dead. So I sat in economy for 24 hours.
Oh, did she get upset with your humor? I mean, because you talked about your family, you talked openly about stuff. Did she ever say, I didn't do that? Or she was, I mean, we talked about it in the last time you were here a long time ago, but I mean, because she was so loving and amazing, but then she could be violent, right?
Yeah, my mother, the best thing she ever did for me is she never complained about any jokes I made about her. It was unbelievable because she was such a strict parent. And then, you know, especially having a comic like me as your son, it could be a stressful thing. You know, someone who talks about, you know, like having sex with women, taking drugs, and then tells nasty stories about their child and all that type of stuff. It can't be fun for a parent to watch.
Do you think her friends, like, imagine, like, she was just with her friends, you're not around, and one of her friends is like, what's her name? What was her name?
Carolyn.
Carolyn. She's like, Carolyn. She's like, is he wrong about that? Is that true? And well, she's like, would she scoff? Like, no, no.
I've had family members who have stopped talking to my parents for not for a long amount of time, but, you know, 6 months or whatever, stopped talking because it's dumb shit that I said on stage.
And she never said anything about it? Like, this is the reason I don't hang out with Caroline.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, there's a few people like, you should be ashamed of your son. It's like, I told a story about my grandmother. And one of my uncles were very upset about it.
What was it?
I'm not going to tell it because the family's back together. If I tell it again, I'll get in more trouble. That was like a big sticking point. The story was only partly true. You know, I embellished it for stage purposes. And then, oh, God, the fallout from that.
Well, come on. I'm not Joe Rogan. It's not like a million people are going to listen to it.
you're not Joe Rogan. None of us are. He's the biggest man in... He's got to be bigger than Howard Stern now, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, he's done it forever. People think, oh, you know, what this guy... This guy's been busting his ass for years, man, with the stand-up, with the WWE, with all that shit, and the podcast for, you know, now all of a sudden the pandemic. I'm glad I was pre-pandemic. I was doing this podcast before any of this hit, and all of a sudden the pandemic hit, and every fucking actor out there, I'm looking at people, I'm like, you have a podcast? You have $1 billion. You don't, what are you doing?
Well, which brings me to, I started a podcast in the pandemic.
I know, but listen, you've also had talk shows. You've had,
and this, I've had a few podcasts right before, but this one's called I Don't Know About That. And it's about, it's not guest related. We have guests on, specialists. And what we do is we pick a subject every episode. And then I say everything I know about it. I don't know about the subject before we go in. I say everything I know about this particular subject. And then the guy that the expert will correct me on what I've got wrong. It's basically what life was like before the internet, when you were in a bar and you met someone and they just told you things and you had to believe that they were telling the truth.
I love it. I watched it.
And if they're not telling the truth, you just go, oh, I don't know about that, and you walk away. That's
you know, I saw one with Jay Leno and it was hilarious because you were like, I don't know a lot about calls or whatever. And you're like, you know, it's like, how many calls you have? I was over here. It's like, 190. 190. He's like, and you're like, do you drive them each one a year? And he's like, yeah. And you're like, you're a liar. There's not enough days in the year for you to drive all these cars. And you guys started going, it was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, Jay was a good sport. That's the problem with podcast days. Like, Jay Leno rang me up to congratulate me on my special. He said, I just watched your special. It was really, I can't do the impersonation, right? And and then you do that thing. That's the problem with podcasting. You can lose a lot of friends because it's like being a person who sells Amway products. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, hey, why are you there? Do you want to do my podcast? You're just bothering people all the time.
Yeah.
Part of the reason why I just wanted to have professors so that I didn't have to bother comedians with asking them all the time.
I would come on if I'm big enough. If you want me to come on, I'd come on anytime. Come on.
Well, what would be your specialty?
I don't know. I'd think about it.
Smallville?
What?
Smallville? Would you do Smallville? Is that big enough?
Is that my specialty, Smallville?
Yeah, that's what you know more about than...
Well, I know a lot about horror movies.
Ah, horror movies. There you go.
Is that boring, though? Is that boring talk?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one, horror movies.
80s music, 80s cheesy rock, 70s light rock, 80s music.
You like music from the 80s.
70s and 80s, but I'll go one further. I go like, I'll listen to some Air Supply. I'll listen to some Glenn Frey, you know. Are you gonna stay with the one who loves you?
I'm a 60s and 90s.
All right, 90s too. I love the 90s. I like a little 90s cheese. Come on. I'm Edie Brickell.
Yeah, I like your Nirvana and your Oasis and I like all that. I found out the other day I was reading something. Do you know that Canada only discovered that they had diamonds in the 1990s? That's the most Canadian thing ever. Like in the 1990s, they didn't know until they're one of the biggest diamond producers in the world, right? They found it. I was watching a documentary and they found out in the 1990s that they had diamonds. That means that, like, when they found diamonds in the background, Wonderwall could have been playing. You know what I mean? Oh, look, I just found this sparkly rock. I better get home and find out what's happened with Ross and Rachel.
Even more so, if they discovered diamonds a lot earlier, maybe the dollar, U.S. dollar, wouldn't be double of what theirs is. Maybe it'd be evener. They'd be, Jesus, the 90s. That's good. I like that.
I'm also of the opinion with music. I don't want any more music. I don't want any more new stuff coming in.
I agree with you.
I've got enough songs. I don't need any more songs. Once you know the lyrics to about 2,000 songs, that's you done. You don't need any more songs. Everybody just needs 2,000 songs they like, and that's all the music that anyone should ever want.
You know what? We are fucking parents because I honestly almost can't name 5 songs from 1999 to now. I couldn't name. And I'm not kidding. Like, I'm not saying there's not some good songs, but the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, maybe a little... At least you could differentiate. You could say, boom, this is where we are. It feels like everybody's got a beard and tight pants now and top hats. And it's like the Amish are making music. I love the Amish. They're not going to listen to this. It's not going to bother.
The last new band I got into, the last new band that I bought albums for is The Killers.
And when was that?
That was about 2005.
All right. So, yeah.
That was the last new band I really got into. Maybe 2000 around then, yeah.
Now, is the music just worse, or are we just the same thing as our parents were?
I'm just set in my way. I'm just an old man who's just like, you bloody kids with your loud rock and roll and just stupid things. You know, I'm the equivalent of like our grandparents when the Beatles came out, just listening to Frank Sinatra going, what is this garbage? It sounds like noise.
It's loud.
Yeah, yeah.
What are you, honestly, what... You know, because I honestly, when I'm in the car, I listen to Ambrosia, 10cc, The Hollies, Chicago to just chill me out. Where other people need loud, I need something that's calming. What do you listen to?
I listen to the Beatles and Crowded House in my car.
Dude, I love Crowded House.
I love Crowded House.
What was that song? What was the one song that I loved?
What's the one song that you love?
Well, the one song, it was their big song. It was kind of a love song.
What, the Hey Now, Hey Now.
Yeah.
Dream It's Over. That was a big song.
There is freedom within.
Your Ariana Grande and your Miley Cyrus did a duet of that. And I remember like liking it and then going, oh, nobody better know about this. I had to listen to it in private in my car. I wouldn't turn it on when someone else, because I got a Tesla, it has a channel. So I had an Ariana Grande and Miley Cyrus channel. And I was like, oh God, how do you delete this thing? I had to put in other channels to make it go to the bottom of the list.
You seem like someone who wouldn't care about what people thought. And that's what you do?
You got to. There's some things. I have my limits.
Ariana Grande. That's your limit. I got to. No one can see this.
Yeah, my brother went and saw Taylor Swift in concert a couple of times.
I like her.
With his daughter. And then I think he secretly became a fan because he went so many times with his daughters. You know? these things can sneak up on you where you're like, oh no, I like this music now.
You know what? I'm not taking back what I said, but I think that if we probably gave some things a chance, we might like them.
Of course we would. But it's like, I don't need it though. I've got enough songs. I'm sure
2000.
There has to be good music coming out. But it's like, what's the point of it? And also, the songs all music is related to happier times in your life, right? So when you're young and you're out and you're trying to meet girls in nightclubs and stuff like that, that song resonated. And when you graduated college, that was the music at all the parties that you listened to. Yeah. And when you know what I mean? I don't have any big events anymore. I don't want to remember any of this. I don't need the songs.
Dude, I swear to God, Jim, I know it's layman's terms and it seems very simple to what you just said, but it just hit me. That's exactly what it is. If I think of Metallica's Black Album, I think I'm on the at 13th Street living with my buddies in a little shithole. We're paying $100. We're having a keg party. We're charging everybody $3 for Milwaukee's Best. And we're going to make enough money to go to Murray's the next morning to have a grilled cheese sandwich. And my roommate takes the Black Album out and goes, I go, what are you doing, man? People are enjoying it. He goes, we already listened to it. I go, put it back in, put the Metallica back. And he's got a cup of beer and I've got a pitcher. And he looks at me and he's just like, no, we're not fucking playing Metallica. People are tired of hearing. I go, the party's just starting. It's a new album. Play it. And he just throws the fucking beer in my face. And I'm like, you motherfucker. And I throw a pitcher of beer in his face. He didn't know I had a pitcher. And we're just standing there. We've never raised our voices with each other. And we're about to fight each other. And my other roommate comes up and goes, what the fuck are you doing? You're friends. It's Metallica. And then we put the Metallica back in for one more play of the whole album. And that was it. But I remember certain moments in my life were happiness. And like True by Spandau Ballet playing at Emil Camacho's house. And we're dancing and now I think about like music and I'm like, well, I'm sort of depressed, anxious. I don't know what's happening. We're in a pandemic. I don't want to remember the song.
No, you don't want to remember this song. And nobody hears it, you know, like even when you have it like a kid, the modern music at the time isn't that. You're always playing them songs that you know so you can sing to them and stuff like that. I feel like everything stops when you have a child as well. So when you become a parent, you don't buy new clothes anymore. That's the outfit you're wearing. That's the day it stops. Like my father still wears a baby blue pair of shorts that have pockets on the front of them and they have a belt buckle where the belt's also blue.
I wear shorts and a t-shirt every day. I have no class.
Oh, quarantine. I mean, underwear.
Are you in underwear right now?
I'm just sitting in underwear and a t-shirt in my screening room. Holding me phone because my computer Wi-Fi wasn't working properly. I had a whole thing set up.
Inside of You is brought to you by Shopify. If you haven't used Shopify and you're starting your own business, I don't know who you are. I don't even want to talk to you because Shopify is so easy to use. It is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. And it's so easy to manage and navigate. For instance, on Talkville and Inside of You, I do it all. I see what the best product selling is. I see what's the least product selling is. I can easily check how much money I've made for the month. It's easy to add a product. It's all so simple. I can do it. It's right there for you. It's just so easy to use. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere.
From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms.
And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/inside, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/inside now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/inside, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Inside of You is brought to you by Factor. Factor Meals has changed my life. I am not spending tons of money ordering delivery service all the time anymore. I get delicious meals that are customized to my liking. I can make them in just 2 minutes. I have a menu of over 35 options delivered to my door. Calorie smart, keto, protein plus, vegan, veggie, you choose. Discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feeling good all day long. And these meals are delicious. I've had their chicken. I've had their chili. I have had their burgers. This is delicious. You're going to save money and no more stress going to the grocery store, Ryan. You don't want to go to the grocery store all the time when you can have your meals delivered right there for you.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. You simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Tailored to your schedule, customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Head to factormeals.com/inside50 and use code INSIDE50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code INSIDE50 at factormeals.com/inside50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
You have 4 specials on Netflix now? You've had 4?
4 specials on Netflix. I had 1 special on HBO, 1 that was on Showtime, 1 that was on Epix, and 1 that I independently made. So I got 8 specials all up.
Jesus Christ. And you have another show that they're developing called Jeffries. Is that still in development?
Well, it got put on hold. We were 1 week out from filming. With the sets were built and the cast was cast. And this just shows the lack of power of the human brain. It was a multi-cam sitcom, so I'd learned the script. Like, I was like just reading it every day. Like, I want to be prepared. I don't want to show up and be an idiot. Because, you know, also that thing being a comedian and working with someone like you, who's a real actor, we always get very like, oh, we don't want to look stupid. You know, I know I can be funny on film, but I don't want to seem unprofessional. So, and I don't really know what the protocol is. So I try to overstudy, you know, what I'm about to do. So I was practicing and reading it every night. And then like about a week ago, I was like, maybe the show will get, you know, the show isn't canceled. It might happen tomorrow. It might happen in 6 months or whatever. So I went, maybe I should practice some of the lines, you know. Couldn't remember one of them. All gone. Have to start from scratch. I did that back in February, and now my brain just went, oh, we don't need that information. Just flicked it out. That's why it's like, what is the point of going to college and studying for 4 years? You don't remember anything. No one remembers anything. Everyone only remembers enough stuff for the exam, and then they do it, and then it's over. It doesn't, like a doctor isn't going, oh, I remember in second year of med school in a third lesson what to do here. It's trial and error. Could you do me a scene from Smallville right now? Could you remember one?
Oh, fuck no.
No, no way.
Now, the only thing I could do is because fans asked me to say it is, can you say I am the villain of the story? And I go, I am the villain of the story. Thank you.
I was watching The Office the other day, and Dwight quotes Smallville.
Oh, yeah. He did Lex Luthor or something, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He said that, yeah. He was on the podcast. I loved him. He was awesome.
He's very The Office has become my my show I have on in the background when I'm doing things. I think I watch it every day.
Yeah, it's a great show.
I watch that and Cheers every day. They took Cheers away. And this is the problem with me. I'm getting about my TV shows the same way I am about my music. I don't need new TV shows. I know all the good ones.
I've got Cheers. I've got All in the Family.
I'll tell you how you know you're going old. The channels that I watch on TV advertise negative mortgages and life alert necklaces all day to me. I must be a fucking old man. They're like, all the adverts I watch go, have you fallen and can't get up? And I'm like, oh, no.
Sorry, that's my grandmother trying to call me.
Maybe she's fallen and she can't get up.
That wouldn't be funny. I was going to say funny.
That wouldn't be funny. A coincidence.
And I'd remember this moment. You know, when you're talking about memorizing lines and stuff, do you get sort of anxious when you're learning lines? Because you've done shows. You had your own show, Legit, which people loved, and it got canceled, but like, you know, I remember it bummed you out, but you study musical theater. You've done things. It's like,
yeah, I I was really proud of Legit, and I would have liked to have done, that's the thing in my career out of everything. Like the Jim Jefferies show got canceled. That was fine. And I've had other setbacks and stuff like that, but that's the only thing that I still feel a little bit pissy about is the cancellation of Legit, because it was moved to FXX, which, and then they were like, oh, the ratings aren't great. And you're like, yeah, you moved us to FXX and it's up in the sports channel. And we had no lead in and we had nothing after me. Our lead in was repeats of Mad About You, right? Like, what the fuck was meant to happen, right? And so I feel like that show has gained an audience since it was canceled. I get people write to me every day saying they like that show. And I really would have liked to have finished off that storyline. And every now and again, I think about like making a little movie or something just to wrap it all up.
Do it. Listen. You love doing it. You love a story. It's a personal story. It's characters you know, characters you grew up with. You have a disabled friend in it. It's original and it's dark and it's, and I think if you love something, it's like, how much would it cost if you shot another 10 episodes yourself? I'll fucking do it.
Yeah, that's true. I could shoot it myself and put it on YouTube or something.
Yeah.
The problem is, if I leave it too long, we have a character that's terminally ill. He should be dead by now.
Not in the fictional world.
Yeah, that's true.
You're picking that's up true. Right where you left off, and maybe he looks older, but people get it.
Well, another idea I've been thinking, because, you know, you listen to those podcasts that are like the Scrubs one and the Office ones where they go over each episode? I was thinking of doing one of those for Legit. I don't care if only 100 people listen to the podcast, if as long as those people are enjoying it, you know what I mean? Like, I was thinking of getting me, Dan Backerwell, and DJ Qualls and doing each episode of Legit. And then if it was popular enough, my plan is, because I wrote half the scripts already for season 3 that never happened. I still have them, right? And so I was thinking of doing a radio play to wrap up some of the storylines.
You should.
Yeah, yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, do it with like a sound effect guy, like open the door.
Foley guy, or yeah, exactly. That would be like an old War of the Worlds. What was it back in the day when they did that radio show? Was it War of the Worlds?
War of the Worlds. Orson Welles did War of the Worlds, and people thought it was an actual news broadcast.
Right.
Because we've had dummies since the dawn of time. It's not just now. You know, when you put something on the internet, you go, look at this idiot. And it's like, no, they've always been around, idiots.
Hey, how often do you go on stage unprepared?
Yeah, so what happens is I quite often, about once, for about 3 months every 2 years, I go out, after I bring out a special, I retire all that material. And then I'm starting fresh, and I have a vague idea of what I might do, but the material isn't embedded in my head yet. And so I go out knowing that I have to talk for an hour and a half, and I think I have about 5 minutes of conversation. I just hope for the best. And it's like, it's very nerve-wracking, because you could be playing in front of thousands of people, and you're like, all right, I'm going to give it a go. And I never write anything down. I've never written a joke down, so I have no logbook of what I've done. So some people put like a little set list on the floor or something so they can go and check it. And so before before quarantine happened, I just had a new show and I'd done it about 10 times and I was really liking it because I'd recorded the special and I was ready to go and I tried it out in clubs and I got it up and running. Same thing now. It's been so long. I don't know what that set was. I know that I talked a long time about the Australian bushfires and that was a lot. It feels like a lifetime ago, but that was February. Australia was on fire. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember I donated. I remember it being horrifying. And now you don't even think of that. It's so feels like it's years ago.
Oh, yeah. It feels like that's who worries about that? We lost like 2/3 of the koalas.
Unbelievable. All right, listen, this is called Shit Talk, and this is all my patrons who support the podcast. They get to ask some questions, so it's rapid fire. You just fucking nail it. Just go whatever you want. You want to answer it? Emily asks, what's your favorite place you've traveled for work?
My favorite place to travel for work is, I love London. I'm going to London for gigs. I get excited to go to London for gigs, and, you know, I spent my 20s there, so I have, you know, a favorite restaurant I want to go to and I have friends that I want to see and I go see me soccer team Fulham play and, you know, so London's probably my favorite place to travel for work.
Mike E., big fan, love your comedy. When things are better, do you have any plans to try and do another show or make the jump into the big screen?
Well, the problem, I've had opportunities to have small parts in films. You know, I've been offered small parts in films here and there, but, you know, I think people think when you do a movie, you get paid millions of dollars. And a few people do, but most people don't, right? And so whenever I get offered these jobs, they're always just like, it's next month. And it's very hard if you're a touring comic to cancel all your live shows to be able to do it. So I've never been able to do it. If I had some spare time and there was a movie, I would do it for peanuts. I'd love the experience, but I never have the spare time.
Would you do a horror movie?
I'm not a fan of horror movies, but of course I'd do a horror movie.
Yeah, all right. When I do,
I would like to do a drama, but my problem with dramas is this, is I've done a few dramatic scenes and they make you really unhappy afterwards. If you have to cry on screen, you're really sad afterwards. And in comedy, they go cut and then everyone starts laughing.
Well, hang on. There's different ways to approach it. Like, thank God, as crazy as I am, I was able to, people would joke because I would be goofing and farting and laughing and ever telling jokes and holding court and the crew's laughing. And then we're rolling, Michael, we're rolling camera here and action. All of a sudden I'd jump in and I'd be serious. I couldn't stay serious all the time. I've talked about it, but so I was able to just get in and get out. I couldn't stay into that. I was able to get out of that pretty easily. I couldn't because I would have just probably died. So you have a tough time.
Do you ever work with actors who don't get out of character, who do the voice all day at lunch and all that kind of stuff?
I've had people where actors, and you got to respect it, but like, you know, first you start to think, you know, it's, you know, your ego, it's like, wait a minute, they don't like me, is it me? They don't like me? Why are they are they being an asshole? I remember John Glover, who played my father on the show, great actor, won a couple Tonys, worked with everybody. The pilot episode, man, he was just very... just like, oh, okay. And I'm like, fuck, I got to work with this guy for 10 years or whatever. And I was like, shit, man, I don't think he likes me. And then, of course, after the pilot, we talked, and I'm like, I thought you didn't like me. He's like, no, I was just really nervous. I was just really in my own head. I was trying to do my... So it's never about you. It's always about... Everybody's got their own method. So if no one, like, I like to joke, and if it bothers some other actor, he should probably fuck off and go sit somewhere, or I'll go away. So just, it's a respect thing, but I don't know, man. If I can't stay sad. Fuck. Unless, here's the thing, if you have to continue being sad in other scenes, you don't want to go up and, like, you want to kind of stay in a moment if you have to do it again right away, right? I don't know. Fuck.
Yeah. It's
Teach
a nerve-wracking job, the old acting, in the sense that. I liken it probably to being an athlete where you don't want the other actors thinking you're shit or the weak link in the team. And it's like, and being a comic, I'm always like, oh, God, I'm not a trained actor. I'm way more nervous acting than I am doing comedy. I'm terrified when I go to do acting.
See, and you said that before, you hinted about that, dude. And I'm thinking... I do the same. When I was doing, I wanted to do stand-up. I was like, fuck, I've always wanted to do stand-up. People have told, you know, Harland and a bunch of my comedians, Nick Swartz, and they were telling me, do stand-up, just do it. I'm like, I'm terrified. And I'm more terrified because I've had success. Like, in other words, I wouldn't be as scared if nobody cared or knew me or anything. But to get up on stage with like guys like you or Swartzen or Joe Rogan, I'm putting myself with the lions and I'm like, how could I possibly succeed here? And it was so terrifying that everybody was like, dude, fuck everybody else. Do your whatever you think's funny, say it. And they may go, oh, that's fucking amateur hour. Yeah, you got to start somewhere. Just keep doing your shit. And it's hard. So I think it was, for me, it was important to hear that, to go, hey man, I'm doing this for me. I mean, fuck, I'm going to go up there and I'm not going to think about what they think about me. So when you're acting, you can't think, oh, I'm acting with some guy who's been acting for 20 years. I'm just a comedian. I got to impress him, or I think you got it. You went to like fucking theater school, whatever. You could do the shit.
I'm really looking forward to, hopefully we make this show, Jeffries. I'm really looking forward to doing a multicam. I think I'll enjoy very much. But first of all, I'm playing myself, so that's always easier, right? But I think I'll really enjoy acting in front of a live studio audience if we can. Because that was the first thing they said to us when the COVID happened. They said, oh, the show's still happening, but there won't be a studio audience. And I was like, fuck. And I remember, like, I wasn't arguing, but I was like sort of pleading. I was like, well, what if we bring in our friends and they sign a release form and they all get tested?
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean?
Jim, you have 100 friends?
Yeah. Well, exactly. All you need is 30 people in there just to know if the jokes are working.
And one guy who laughs at anything.
Well, also the thing with the old, people always go with it, like the multi-game sitcoms, they go, oh, the canned laughter. It's not canned. It's real laughter. People are there watching and laughing. It's real.
Yeah, but sometimes you're like, how are they laughing at that? 9 times out of 10, I'm like, how is that fucking funny? I've been on sitcoms, and when you were like, it's the best, I'm like, sorry if I jump. I don't know why I jump in like you. Oh, everybody does that because you have a cool accent. So everybody tries to do you. So all of a sudden, I'm like, shut the fuck up. Just do it to me. Shut the fuck up. So when I was, I've done a couple. I did 2 years on a sitcom, another 1 year in a sitcom, a pilot, two pilots, and I didn't like it. I didn't like it because it always changed, and up till Thursday and then Friday, they're throwing new shit at you. And I'm like, fuck, I got to learn all these things. And I don't know what, and it's nerve wracking, like learning things on the fly.
I liked Impasta. I thought that was good.
Thanks, dude. It was fun, but it wasn't a sitcom. It wasn't live audience.
That wasn't live audience, but it was funny.
Thanks, man. I loved it. You know, and one of those things is like, it went 2 years and got good reviews. It's like legit, right? And then all of a sudden they cancel it. And you're like, well, it lasted 2 years. It's not like I got canceled after a pilot or one season. It made two seasons. So you kind of just got to look at the bright side of things, man, because you could definitely go like, fuck, why? And they were like, well, we're skewing towards females. I'm like, all right, let it go.
Well, when they canceled the Jim Jeffries show to begin with, I was like, hurt, because like my ratings were okay. And it's like, I guess people don't want to watch me on TV. I was like a bit down for a couple of weeks, you know? And then what happened was like Comedy Central basically just fired all their executives and everything. And now the show, the channel is basically The Daily Show and South Park is all they sort of kept. And they got rid of all other shows.
Right.
And I was like, oh, well, I won't take it personally. Then they got rid of everything.
Right. See, that's different. They didn't. Yeah. They just got rid of us. So thanks for bringing that up. Lisa H says, what are your thoughts on the current influx of TikTokers and YouTubers getting Netflix specials and recognition as comedians off a short bit being uploaded to social media?
Yeah, I try not to be a bitter old man about things like that. Like, oh, these kids today on their TikToking and their other. It's not for me. I don't get it. I don't get they're just mouthing along with other. There's a lot of TikToks in my stand-up and people doing my stand-up in their car. And, you know what I mean? And I don't quite get it. But if people are watching it, if they're making millions, there's got to be competition, right? There's got to be a lot of, like, with. We're saying, oh, these YouTubers, these influencers, they're doing something because millions of people watch them. And so you've got to give them credit. And they're prolific. They're bringing out a clip every week and lots of stuff. I don't go on social media very much for a couple of reasons. The first reason I don't go on is I'm not a big fan of social media. And I think I'm also a big believer that sort of people in the limelight or whatever, there should be a bit of mystique around you and people should watch whatever your art is rather than watch you. You know, that's what I think, right? and you know, I find nothing worse than watching an actor who Insta story is 20 things long for a day. I'm like, what the fuck are we doing here? Right? but that's just me. But also, there's probably an amount that I don't want to go on social media because I don't want to put myself out there and put something out that I think's funny, and then people are like, well, this isn't funny. You know what I mean? So I'd rather just leave it alone and do my stand-up. And so I think it's very ballsy to be a prolific TikToker or YouTuber. Yeah. Like, there must be some skill there. So just because it's not for me doesn't mean that it shouldn't happen.
Chris F., do you think having a child has changed how you do stand-up?
Yeah, of course. Well, it changed how I did stand-up in the sense that I talk about him a lot on stage. also, I am conscious of being as much of a douchebag as I was on stage because my son might watch it. But then there's the other argument that all the old stand-up footage already exists. So, you know, I assume at one stage you'll be embarrassed of me. You might be proud of me, but you almost also might be embarrassed of me.
How old is he?
He's 7.
Have you ever sat down with him and go, look, this is who your dad is. I don't recommend doing some of the things I've done, but I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to be very honest with you. Or is he just too young to even talk about that stuff?
He's too young for that, but I will have that talk. And I prepare that talk in my head on a daily basis.
Will you be sober?
But you reckon I'm going to be racking up in front of him?
No, I didn't think.
Around, I got a belt around my arm and a spoon.
Give me a drunk Jim Jefferies. How would you a drunk Jim Jefferies sound?
Well, this is the thing. People.
I know you're not a drunk now. I don't, you know, a drink. You don't. People have this perception because you talk about things on stage. So
I still have I gave up drinking for a long time, and I still have the occasional drink now in quarantine. Very okay. And I don't drink when I work anymore. I don't drink on stage any longer, and I don't drink if I'm working on a TV show anymore because I used to do that whilst I was doing that, and that wasn't good for me. Now I do it occasionally, but the problem I have is I think I mumble naturally anyway, and I think because of the accent, sometimes I'll do a show stone sober, and then afterwards a review will be like, he was drunk as fuck, and you're like, no, I wasn't. I just, you know, and I've been for auditions where my representatives have been like, he showed up drunk, and I'm like, no, it's just, I'm just Australian. So I don't know.
That's hilarious.
Maybe my voice has a bit of damage in it from the past still.
Maybe. All right, dude, this has been awesome. So what's going on right now? What can people watch? What do you want people to watch? What are you looking forward to?
Well, watch my podcast. Apart from that, my stand-up special, Intolerant, is now out on Netflix. And apart from that, I watched The Morning Show on Apple. I enjoyed that. I suggest people watch that. That was my favorite show of the year.
Nice. And you're like, you're keeping busy. You're honestly like, if you're not busy, does the darkness come out? Do you feel like anxious? Do you get depressed?
What I have learned from quarantine is that I think I'm going to be well prepared for retirement. I think I'm going to be all right with it. You know, a lot of people in the entertainment industry, they worry that they'll be forgotten. And I think I wouldn't mind that. I think that'll be okay.
You know what? If you truly believe that, that's actually a really good thing to feel. And be, if you're honest with yourself, because honestly, if you could say, you know, I really don't care if people remember me. I really don't care if I didn't have any impact. I really don't.
Well, I tried my best, and I've made a lot of people laugh, and you know, over the years, and if it all fades away, I'm used to it. You know, like the thing with Joan Rivers, right up until she died, was just like, if there's no dates in the diary, you'll be forgotten. And I'm like, that must have been a very stressful way to live. She was in her 80s, worried she was going to be forgotten, and it's like, just relax and. You know what I mean? Just, you've made some money, sit back and enjoy it.
And what does it matter? Think about it. I mean, when you're gone, when we die,
it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. And the people who like you will like you, and they'll get to watch it. The footage will always be there. And, you know, and the people who don't like you, hopefully they don't spend that much time worrying about how much they don't like you. I'm amazed by the haters in this world that put so much energy into hate. It's like there's bands and there's comedians and there's things that I don't like. And what I do is I don't watch them. So easy.
So why get on and harass you if you don't like you?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, why are you here? You see that all the time. You're like, I hate this music. Well, don't go see them play in concert at the Hollywood Bowl. Yeah. I'm not going to go see him.
Don't go see him. Yeah.
I don't know. I think people get bored. They just want to hate. They want to express themselves.
Why are you watching a YouTube clip of an artist you don't like? It's so weird.
It is weird. Dude, I love this, man. I love having you on. And honestly, if you ever need a guest, let me know.
All right, mate. Thanks for having me.
Another fun episode. I hope you guys enjoyed that. If you don't know Jim, check out his specials. It just makes me laugh. I just love that story about his mother, how, you know, when I was like, the shit that he would do on stage, and he would get himself in trouble, and yeah, the family would all be like, well, what's this? I just think it's so funny. And then, like, you know, his mom wouldn't say anything to him. She's like, you know, I did this, so I'm allowing you to do this. And mm-hmm. I just find it kind of fascinating. I go, well, tell one of those stories. He goes, no, mate, no, it's a shit storm about to. He's a lot of fun. He got a little personal the last time, and I wouldn't say he's an open book. He likes to joke and laugh, but you know, trying to get a little serious isn't as easy sometimes with mm-hmm. certain people, you know, mm-hmm. but, you know, I could tell when we talked about his, you know, drinking, and I'm like, you know, obviously you talk about it on stage and all this stuff. You can tell he was a little sensitive, you know, mm-hmm. I was like, well, I don't mean you do that now. It's like, no, you know, I'm too fucking old. I got all this stuff going on, you know, I totally buy that. I thought I was insinuating that you're a drunk. I was like, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, you know, you talk about that. You had this persona. Mm-hmm. And
I just don't think he wants to get offered cocaine on the street anymore.
Yeah.
You know, that was, oh, boy.
Yeah. Hey, you want some coke, mate? No. Yeah. I've had that. We've all had people come up and say, you want some coke?
Oh, no.
Oh, unless they recognize you. I haven't had one go, oh, you're Lex Luthor. You want to do some heroin? What? No. You know what, I haven't had that.
How does that track?
Thanks so much for listening, guys. I really appreciate it. And if this is the first time, if you just came here because you're a Jim Jeffries fan, it'd be awesome if you subscribe, you know, follow the handles at Inside E Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and at Inside E Pod on Twitter. Write a review, watch the YouTube, or on YouTube, you can watch it, you can listen to it anywhere. So thanks. And all my patrons, thank you so much. Before I get into the patrons, Rob Danson and I, Stage It. Go to stageit.com, type in Rosenbaum and Danson. We're doing two shows this coming Saturday, the 29th, 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Covers, originals, some Left on Laurel, the band I was in before. And it's a lot of fun. There are prizes, Zooms. You know, some people get, like, we dedicate a certain song to you, and we'll text it to you. So we'll play any song you want. Just go to stageit.com and type in Rosenbaum and Danson. It's a lot of fun, and we're working on our album. I guess I should talk about these wonderful people who really give to the show, and that's the patrons. Mm-hmm. Let's read them out. Let's read them out. You guys ready for this? So Nancy D, Leah S, Trisha F, Sarah V, Little Lisa, Yukiko, Jill E, Brian H, Lauren G, Nico P. I'm compelled. I know these people now. So it's reading their names. I want to say more, but then you'd be here for 4 hours. Barry I, Angelina G, Robin S, Jerry W, Emily K, Bob B, Robert B, Jensen Ackles, Jason W, Stephen J, Kristen K, Amelia O, Allison L, Tom N, Jess J, Lucas M, Raj, Joshua D, Emily S, CJP, Samantha M, Hamza. There's certain names you just remember. Hamza, Yukiko, Raj. You just, you know, Jennifer N, Stacy B. I think Bryce does that purposely, just puts them intermittently throughout the thing. So
it's not all on a row. It doesn't sound like a superhero team.
Yeah. Jennifer Nandriello, Stacy B, Carly T, Jennifer S, Janelle B, Tabitha 272, not to be confused with Tabitha
273,
Kimberly E, Crystal H, Mike E, Marissa N, Ramira, Beth B, Chris F, Chad W, Leanne P, Jackie P, Rodrigo S, Rachin. Ray A, Maya P, Megan D, Jennifer S, Maddie S, Tiffany I, Kendrick F, Ashley E, Margie M, Thomas T, Matt W, Belinda N, Benjamin R, Lisa J, Kevin V, Robert S, Joy W, Nicole M, Amber F, James R, Chris H, Snow R, Noah K, and Sean V. You guys are amazing, and I appreciate it. Also, everybody, go to the online store. Got some new Insidey beach towels, got some mugs, autographed mugs, new women's V-neck fitted t-shirts. They're going fast. Ryan?
Yeah.
Are you you got a good weekend coming up? Is there anything fun?
I mean, just more of the same stuff, you know, because we are in this situation. So, no. Do you have anything fun? I know you went golfing.
We're like Wolf Blitzer. We're in the situation
room. We're in the situation room.
I do enjoy golfing. So, when you're with one person and you're on the course, and it's just, I feel like it's okay.
I might have to start because all of my rec league sports got canceled, like softball and soccer.
Yeah, I can't play hockey. I can't play anything. So
I might have to golf or something.
If you want
to
golf, take it up, man. I just started like a couple weeks ago, and I am hitting balls. All right, guys, we love you. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, please keep listening and watching, subscribing, and all that stuff. Thank you so much. Thanks for allowing me to be inside each and every one of you.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.